who are all these people? What do all these acronyms mean? How do they relate to each other? And what can I possibly do about this?
Welcome back to the Tectonic Podcast, Making Innovation Work in Software, Business, and Life. I am your co-host, Jason Shen.
And I am your other co-host, Sarah Allen. We are here tonight talking about the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program. Those of you who've been tuning in since the beginning know that Jason and I started this Fellowship of Innovation working at the federal government at the Smithsonian as part of this program. And here tonight we have a special guest, Molly Ruskin, who is currently an active Presidential Innovation Fellow at the VA.
Hello, everyone. Nice to join you guys.
Thanks for being with us, Molly.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat about this together.
Yeah, and I recently wrote this blog post because I was on this mailing list and somebody said, what is the day-to-day life of a Presidential Innovation Fellow? And I answered this email and I ended up like writing all of this stuff because it's a little opaque from the outside. You know, this is a new position. Who knows, you know, what these people do over there in D.C.?
Yeah, and I think this was really great because when I was applying in for round two, I was scrounging around and looking for a blog post around what it's like to be a fellow, and I didn't get much. I got a couple like, hey, I just started and this is exciting, but not like, this is what I've been doing, here's what it's like. And I had to just find my way to the contact information of the fellows who had been serving and trying to get them on the phone and talk to me in person. But that's super inefficient and not helpful to everyone who didn't have a phone conversation with those fellows.
And it's also, I think it's evolving. You know, I would guess that, you know, us in round two had a slightly different experience than the folks in round one. And round three is likely to have a little more continuity with us. Which means that we can give it a little insight.
For sure. And so I think what would be great is because we'll talk more about our time at the Smithsonian, and definitely everyone should read this blog post, which will be in the show notes, is to turn it over a little bit to Molly and have her talk about her experience, because one of the things that we've realized is that our experience, every fellow's experience is a little bit different. And for us at the Smithsonian, we weren't even really part of the federal government. You know, the Smithsonian is a federal trust. It often acts almost more like a institution of higher education or a nonprofit organization than it does. You know, sometimes it does feel like a real federal organization. But Molly was at the VA, and, you know, Molly, we'd love to hear more about sort of the work that you have been working on and what it's actually like to be a fellow from your position.
Cool. Well, I'll try to break that into a few little soundbite niblets for you guys and not get too deep in the weeds here. So like Jason and Sarah, I started out last summer, and my fellowship is a full year. Those guys had 6 months. So I've been embedded in the belly of the beast at the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's been an incredibly educational and just sort of elucidating experience. I really didn't have much of a sense of what these kinds of environments were like before. And my fellowship is interesting. I would say that I play more of sort of like an internal consultant's advisor role as a developer. I'm a designer by background, both in sort of the experience side and visual side. And while I've had such really awesome opportunities to work with some of my other fellows on their projects in terms of doing actual visual design, most of my work has more been sort of like helping the organization understand methodologies and best practices and principles for creating more user-friendly tools and experiences. And it's been really interesting. The first 6 months, 8 months or so was a lot of asking the same questions. Mostly, have you talked to your users recently? Over and over again. And it's really interesting because now that's really starting to pay off. And we're starting to see people ask those questions themselves and more appetite and willingness to invest in sort of deeper understanding of how to create more user-friendly experiences for veterans, and just sort of a more openness in general. So I can talk about specifics, but I'll let you guys dive in a little. That would be helpful.
I think that's a great perspective. You bring up a really good point, which is the fellows come from lots of different backgrounds. I come from a deep development background. I've done a lot of different things, but that's really, I love to write code. And part of my excitement about the Smithsonian project was the ability to dive back into hands-on work from being a manager for a while. And, you know, Molly, you come from a design perspective. And Jason had this tremendous strength on, you know, from marketing and outreach and being a founder himself. And even though we come with this deep experience, what I hear over and over again from the different fellows that most of what we're doing is talking about creative problem solving and trying to figure out what exactly are the citizen needs or the stakeholder needs and coming up with key small wins that are really going to change the way the government does business.
Yeah, that's totally right. I mean, I think it's definitely been an interesting experience for all of us who are just like, I want to make something, I want to put my hands on something, because that's sort of like what drives and motivates a lot of us. But ultimately, more effective than us spending all of our time building and designing is sort of helping to empower and give other people around us the tools and resources to be able to continue that work past our time. Though you're right, Sarah, having those little sort of tangible wins is key to making this actually work out well.
Molly, can you talk a little bit about what the project was when you walked in? I think it's important, you know, we're gonna spend a little bit of time looking at the round three projects, but I think it's always interesting to see what you were told your project was going to be and sort of what it's ended up becoming.
Sure. Sarah mentioned my background is in design, though I would say I'm really an anomaly from this group, and that I don't come from Silicon Valley. I haven't worked in a tech startup. My career has mostly been sort of with nonprofits and advocacy and organizing, and sort of grew into a designer from that space. So I was kind of originally brought in to help the organization think about how to engage with and communicate and outreach to veterans to encourage them to make use of their benefits. So the VA sort of got two major service offerings to the public. It's the health centers, the medical facilities that most people think of, but they also have an enormous suite of benefits available to veterans and their families, everything from disability compensation for injuries they occurred while in service, to getting home loans and life insurance, all sorts of stuff, education benefits. And their families don't know anything about this. So at first they really wanted me to think about this sort of from like a grassroots organizing perspective, which sort of, I think that's super, super cool, other than that I'm just kind of an organizing dork and love to talk about that stuff all day. But it really shows that innovation doesn't necessarily just mean technology. It's kind of about bringing outside ideas, the ways that things are done in other parts of our economy to the government, which I think is just fantastic. That said, that's actually not really been most of the focus of my work. And it's definitely been an exercise in adaptability and flexibility. As it turns out, we have an enormous backlog of people who have submitted claims for their benefits. And the organization realized, well, we probably shouldn't be prioritizing our time on trying to bring more people in. We should be prioritizing on time and making that system work even better and more effectively so people can get and then bring more people in. So I've sort of had to pivot and switch gears. And I think I've sort of broadened out from a focus on grassroots organizing and outreach to sort of human-centered design and user-centered design as sort of how to make this more of a people-friendly experience, which is not something you usually associate with the government. So to Jason's point, totally, you start out thinking you're going to be doing one thing and then you pivot again and pivot again and pivot again. I think coming at this with this like open excitement and appetite for trying new things is as important for us as it is for our government partners.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really interested, we being people who care about the program and who want to bring new people into the program for round three, want to bring in really talented folks in these different fields. But we're also aware of the fact that we want to signpost that if the idea of your project changing while you're there scares you a lot and makes you extremely uncomfortable, that you might want to rethink whether or not this is the right thing for you. But if that's kind of exciting, if you're wanting to just get to the heart of the problem, no matter what the problem really ends up being, I think that that is definitely going to happen in some capacity during your time as a fellow.
Yeah,
that's a really great point.
Oh, go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah. I think that there's this. To me, it was super exciting because I had this, North Star of, okay, we are making change in the world. We are doing things that, and the Smithsonian has this huge mission to increase and diffuse knowledge amongst men. And I think they mean all humanity. And they have these enormous initiatives that we were really focused on. How do we bring that to the digital world in a way that is accelerate their presence in the digital world, which of course they already have a big presence, but the potential is so much more vast. And thinking that, well, maybe the person that I'm quote reporting to doesn't have a concept of what's even possible. And my job is to do something amazing with this crazy situation. And there's, I don't report, I don't have a manager. It was more like being a grassroots volunteer or being a CEO or being some kind of entrepreneur than it was having a job working for a boss.
Yeah. And to that point, I'd love to talk a little bit about sort of day-to-day activities. Even as we talk about this, I can't help but notice that we're being pretty high level with our discussion, and it's just natural to be that way. I think just to tie it into sort of actions, right? Like from my perspective, from a week-to-week basis, I think we spent a fair amount of time on email, conversing with other fellows, conversing with various people within the organization, planning to meet up or planning to talk about certain things. I spent a good amount of time writing blog posts or writing emails that went out to the Smithsonian Transcription Center user base. And then I spent a good amount of time around like wireframing, creating presentations, sort of designy kind of things that were sort of helping either craft ideas for technology products or create sort of design communication products that would be used to sort of present in meetings to either inform or convince groups of people within the organization to sort of go along with some of the ideas we were putting forth. And I'd love to hear sort of from you, Molly, like what do you, if you were to sort of split up your time in terms of actions, where those actions are.
That's an interesting question. I feel like this is an annoying answer, but it really varies given the week and the day. I'm coming off of a really long day where my time was like 95%, I was in meetings all day. And actually really productive, really good, effective meetings. And some days, I'm like holed up, mouse to pixel, pencil to paper, however you want to say it, doing actual design work. But it's hard to sort of break down because projects will move in cycles, So sometimes it's like work time and sometimes it's like selling time. And recently I've been doing an interesting mix of actual sort of planning for some future projects, as well as doing some actual training. So one of the things that's cool is sort of being this this bullhorn for human-centered design, and really trying to equip the organization to understand some specific tools we can use in order to like really create services that respond to the needs of users. Is that people are like real excited about it now, so they keep asking me to do trainings around the organization, which is a different use of time than I was doing sort of even as little as like 2 or 3 months ago. But you know, an average day will have me spending some time with the immediate office that I work with. You know, I participate in their weekly staff meetings. I do some direct work for them, design, but they really empower me and support me to sort of work on other projects around the organization. I'll spend a couple hours a week meeting with folks fixing a very specific tool on the VA website. I'll also spend some time with other fellows, helping collaborate with them. Sometimes I do a lot of visual design work there, as well as helping people to sort of plan out projects and giving them advice and feedback on how to design and implement a project in a way that will allow for usability testing, for example. Is that sort of a helpful break?
No, that's good. That's good. I you know, it is always hard because what we do varies so much. And but I think, you know, over, you know, when you, with you looking across a couple weeks to a couple months, you can start to see the variety of tasks and activities that you're involved in. And so I think that's good.
Yeah, I think that's a good contrast with, you know, like Jason and I had one main project that we worked on, the Transcription Center, and we had a lot of smaller projects and initiatives around that, around open data, and we did a hackathon, we did all of these other smaller projects, but it was, there were a few fellows, probably, I don't know, maybe a third of the fellows, half the fellows that had kind of a project they were working on. And then there were other people who had something that they were trying to achieve that is many projects. And it sounds like that was your experience, Molly. That you're in the many projects in a bigger
pool. Yeah, I think that's right. And it's gone from, I would say this is probably true of a number of the fellows, is that a number of us up front were given sort of a really broad mandate. And so our time is more kind of like, all right, let's figure out what's going on. So I would say in the first couple of months for me was a lot of, I mean, I guess you could call it research, but it was just like building this really nuanced ecosystem, understanding like, who are all these people? What do all these acronyms mean? How do they relate to each other? And what can I possibly do about this? And so I spend a lot less of my time doing that now. And the thing that's really cool about it, I've heard other fellows say this too, is that most people who work in these organizations don't have the privilege of doing that. And so sometimes like there's parts of these organizations that like I understand that people who've been here for like 10 years don't know anything about, because they have their one function or they work in this one place. I wish that there were a way to share that with some of my colleagues who are like, well, I never knew that that's what that thing did, or, you know, oh, I've never even heard of this office. And I'm like, yeah, you should talk to each other.
It's cool. Like when you first start something, you have the freedom and the flexibility to ask dumb questions and just poke around and say, who's in charge of that? How does this work? How do I get one of those? Who schedules this? Whereas if you've been around a little bit longer, it gets harder. It's like after so much time, you know, it's kind of discouraged to spend too much time poking around on things that are not your primary function. And the fellows sort of bring in this fresh, renewed sense of, you know, we can reevaluate. Let's reconsider, because you're asking all these questions that maybe no one's asked in a long time.
Yeah, that's totally got it. That's definitely, and even being here, like, you know, 8-9 months later, like I've already lost some of that. Now I know what all the acronyms are, so I use them too, you know?
Yeah, you become one of them. And I think that's part of the point, right? For those of you considering applying, the not so secret mission of the fellowship is also to introduce people who would have never otherwise considered working for the federal government, you know, giving them a taste of it in a way that sort of maybe they can see it in a new light, in a new way. I remember there was this whole Windows commercial, Microsoft Windows, where they were trying to show, was it Vista or the one after Vista, Windows 7 or something like that, where it was like, you know, what have you heard about Windows Vista? And they're like, oh yeah, it sucks, it's so bad, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, we're going to show you this new version of Windows, and it's like the next version. We want to know what you think about it. And then try it, and they're showing these reactions like, oh yeah, this is smooth, this is slick, this is like, I like this, this is really good. And it's like, actually, this is just Windows Vista. And, you know, when you come at it without the preconceived notions, maybe it'll be better than if you walk in thinking, oh boy, this is the, you know, Uncle Sam federal government, big USG.
Well, I think, I mean, I certainly felt like it was a 6-month long civics lesson. You know, there was stuff that I needed to know for our job that I hadn't really reviewed since high school U.S. history. Like, oh, wait, how does our government work? Because it doesn't really affect you working in Silicon Valley at an internet startup.
Yeah. That, I mean, or like most people, right? I mean, we're kind of all woefully under-informed citizens, which is part of the thing that I think is just so, so awesome about this. So this is a group of people that are like, you know what? Everyday people who are awesome and excited about making stuff better for the world should understand how the government works. It's like a real privilege to get that firsthand exposure.
Cool. Let's take a look at some of the projects that are for this round three. You know, they're part of the application now. The application's been simplified. We as fellows, we actually, I feel like they've responded to some of the things that we said in terms of, you know, the application and things like that. You know, when we were fellows, there were, it seemed like a wide smattering of projects without sort of a broader theme. There are a lot of times fellows were kind of, quote, on their own, sort of siloed or kind of out there, and they didn't feel like they had other fellows to work with, and it became kind of an isolating, challenging experience. And so what they've really tried to do here is to create these three themes. One around building a 21st century veterans experience. And, you know, it seems like there's going to be a number of fellows who are coming into the VA, and they're going to plan that, anticipate that. Crowdsourcing, you know, Sarah, I can't help but feel like we did something by, because I don't even remember when we were discussing this before that crowdsourcing was such a theme, but it seems like they've really unified a couple of these projects as ways of sort of engaging citizens or a broader group of people to support the federal government in different capacities. And then,
The Smithsonian Transcription Project, as well as the Innovation Toolkit, really let kind of whet their appetite about the potential for crowdsourcing.
Yeah. And then the final category is now data innovation, which we may have felt was similar to the open data projects, but I think that they're trying to go beyond just opening data and really, with the word innovation, focusing on the results and the activities and the projects and services and products that can come out of the fact that data is now being opened.
Yeah, I think that this comes out of the user-centric design, which is a real theme in, I think, all of the Presidential Innovation Fellows initiatives, and all, you know, everybody has really tried to, you know, kind of listen to the stakeholders and the users that data is not an end unto itself, right? We're trying to actually do things that have impact on the American people. So let's talk about them in order a little bit. Like, let's start with the VA. And this is at whitehouse.gov/innovationfellows. There's a whole list of the projects. And I just want to say that, like, when I applied for this, there's like a big text field for each of these different priority initiatives. And when we applied, there were 10 of them.
Right.
So I was under the mistaken impression that each of those would get one innovation fellow. And it was very confusing because I was like, wow, that's a big lot of different things for one person to do. But I applied anyhow and I wrote a whole bunch of stuff. So I think it's important to note that in each of these themes, these initiatives are. And so when you're filling that out, you can speak to, you know, the general theme, or you can speak to one of the projects that I've identified that, you know, you have direct experience with, or that really, you know, it seems to resonate with you, that there will be a group of fellows for each of these initiatives.
Yeah, totally. And I just want to offer a little bit of an application hack. The word count is a suggestion, not actually a cap. So don't belabor yourself to like make your words exactly right, make your case compelling. The point is don't write a novel, but you'll notice if you write more than 150 words, it doesn't stop you. So
yeah, that's definitely a good thing to know. Yeah. I mean, even, you know, what you're saying, Sarah, about how they're looking, there's going to be a number of people on each project. With the VA one, right, they talk about a variety of things, everything from APIs and technology platforms to sort of integrating services, user experience, in-house entrepreneurs. There's a lot going on here, and I think it's important to recognize that you, as an applicant, you shouldn't feel like you have to be able to do everything, but that you would be a key contributor in at least one of these areas, and you'd be able to plug in and really do a lot, and then also be able to sort of speak intelligently and productively with other members of the team who are working on other parts of the project.
Yeah, I mean, just to weigh in on that a little bit, like, totally nailed it, Jason. Like, you definitely don't need to know all these things. I'll be honest, like, I didn't have a highly technical background. I did front-end web development, but like APIs were not something I had a lot of contact with. I think in a lot of ways you end up learning from your peers and your fellows. It's now a term that I use on a daily basis. I think that, just to pitch this a little bit, and I'm obviously biased, like, this is going to be an incredibly exciting, incredibly unique opportunity to be a part of this. I mean, the VA is like at a threshold of needing to update its 30, 40-year-old systems to become something that's completely transformative for veterans and for the public in general. And this group of fellows that we're bringing in are going to be absolutely clutched. It's not, you're not interns, you're not sort of like digging around, poking around, you're like fundamental. And it's really an exciting chance if you're particularly interested in the issue of sort of service delivery, like what the government is at its core. I think the VA really encaptures that. It's providing something to people who would literally not have access to it if it weren't for this government service. And that government service is kind of like janky and broken right now. And so everything from, you know, high end like tech dev stack to visual designers, user experience, I think we need communications people. I think if you find this problem appealing, even if your skill set isn't listed in here, like, throw your passion at it, because I think there's a compelling case for lots of different kinds of backgrounds to be relevant here. My veteran high horse now. So
I think that's a fabulous discussion about it, because I mean, one of the things that was really exciting about being a fellow was having peers who have deep experience that's different from mine. And I mean, not only across an individual project, but across the whole fellowship, being able to, you know, strategize with people, trade stories, be like, okay, can you pinch hit on my project? And I do think it's pretty exciting to have a whole group of fellows focused on this pretty critical national priority of making the veterans' experience better.
Yeah, totally.
No, that was great. That was great perspective. Looking at the crowdsourcing one, you know, it seems like if the Veterans Affairs one is really about sort of working together as a team to deliver better services, or to help the government deliver better services. What's interesting about, as I look through the crowdsourcing projects, is that in some ways they feel almost like the most, if you were to do like a startup, like they feel the most startup-y in the sense that crowdsourcing by its nature requires sort of building technology that's going to be used by a wide range of people, and sort of the best way to leverage the efforts of those people is by continuing to improve the product and iterate and make it so that users do the right thing naturally, that they know what to do, that they it's sticky, that they come back, they do more, they do it right, and sort of behave the right way. You know, everything from, and then that there's an interesting amount of technology involved, right? So Nera has some crowdsourcing transcription projects that's kind of mirrors the work that we were doing at the Smithsonian, which is very felt like creating a tech product. Similarly with the patents in the U.S. Trademark Office. The asteroid one seems more like high tech, sort of thinking about ways to, what is this? Find all asteroid threats to human populations and know what to do about them. I mean, that seems pretty, pretty awesome.
Although that could be as much a outreach communication thing as a technical thing, because I think it's not just coming up with those ideas yourself. The whole point of crowdsourcing is that you're leveraging talent across the country, across the world. So how can we create a system that allows that type of communication or collaboration or whatever? But it certainly sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely, though. Yeah, it can't be, you know, this isn't going to be for people who just want to come up with the best, brightest idea on their own and just implement it in peace, as it were. You know, there is going to be a lot of stakeholders involved in any kind of crowdsourcing project.
And one thing I would add is that you don't need to be like an expert in crowdsourcing. I think all of these teams are going to be a couple people with a few skill sets. I think Sarah and Jason are a great example of this. So you might have something, one of these issues might really speak to you, but you don't necessarily need to have like crowdsourced the greatest innovation ever to be qualified for that. So again, I think it's more about the different kind of skills that you bring and matching those and putting together sort of quality teams. So don't self-select out if you're excited about something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then when it comes to data innovation, it seems to me that data innovation, if I try to map some of the things that have made the folks who are in open data most successful, it's almost like these are the folks that that are kind of like the BD folks. Like there's some partnerships involved, right? There's a lot of talk about having conversations with entrepreneurs or developers or just community members who could use the data that is being put forth by these various organizations and agencies. And a lot of success is around organizing things like data jams and getting sort of convening people, but in a more personal sort of one-on-one relationship based way than like crowdsourcing, where maybe you're dealing with thousands of people that you don't all talk to. This is on a more sort of human scale.
Yeah, that's true. Like I was quite impressed with some of the fellows who didn't have, I mean, maybe it was just because I had a technical background. My assumption was that that was the crew, that was what was going to happen. And it was really delightful to see, you know, we had people who had business background, had product background, who had, you know, investment background, being able to negotiate these incredible partnerships between our government and industry. Or simply just getting industry to step up and say, yeah, if you open this data, and we'll use it, which then, of course, accelerates the motion inside government to make that happen. Because there's so much to do. There's so much data that needs to be opened and made available, and having those customers identified of people who are going to use it, going to do something about it with it, that's going to create a new business or create jobs or, you know, save lives. That transforms how people work inside government.
Yeah, I think a lot of people take it for granted that opening data is a good thing and it's the obvious thing to do and it's the right thing to do. But I think that without strong examples of where data should be opened and sort of creating those wins that sort of reinforce the idea that open data is important and is a net positive on society, it's just not going to happen, right? There are lots of people who have plenty of work to do and don't feel like spending the time to open up these data sets and make them easily available through APIs and things like that is worth their time when they have all these other demands. But that's the job of this team, of the data innovation team, is to really sort of continue to unequivocally show that this is not something that's a nice to have. This is not just a sort of icing on the cake, but this is a real sort of deep fundamental service that the government needs to provide and that there's tangible benefits that come from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to make the point that it's not all federal data being opened. Some of it is creating mechanisms that allow you to access your personal data. So like Blue Button was an innovation that came out of the Round One Fellows that was getting veterans their own access to their own medical records. And then in Round Two, they really jumped off of that and created a standard for making it so that anyone could get their health records and getting buy-in from our medical companies and hospitals and establishments in allowing people to get their own health records. So this isn't federal data, it's my data, right? So in theory, I can go to any of my doctors and get my medical records, but in reality, I have to go to every doctor I've ever been to and get them to Xerox it for me. But what they did is they started with the pharmacies, and they created great alignment across Safeway, Rite Aid, CVS, all of these national chains and national pharmacy associations that we'll be able to get our own, drug store history from them using the Blue Button mechanism. So I think that's sort of an interesting angle, that it's not just open data, it's also personal data, having personal access to personal data. So I think so that's great review, Jason, of the three main themes. Molly, you were also under the open data umbrella, or were you, did you
VA was
say
separate, right?
yeah?
No, I kind of jumped on the open data bandwagon. I basically at the VA, we are fortunate to have this is one of the really cool things about this is you find these people around these agencies who are just sort of like oozing with ideas and energy, and it's kind of untapped and they're all by themselves. So I was able to connect with someone sort of who fit that profile, who was leading our sort of bootstrap open data effort. And we decided we wanted to make an open data page that didn't look like a giant list of data files. So we sort of took a little bit of like a sexy design brush to it. And that sort of opened for me the whole entry into the open data space, even though that wasn't really the focus of my project. So, and I would say a thing I loved about that was having the resources of all you guys and everyone else who was like, yeah, come on, we'll tell you what to do. We'll tell you what these weird mush mash letters together without any nouns or in between them. So I learned a ton. But I think that's true of a lot of folks. We end up sort of hopping on each other's little things and learning about some of the other stuff we're all doing together. So long answer to your question of no, I was not originally an open data fellow.
But I think that's a great example of how we have these broad mandates and we have latitude to do projects that push each other's projects. And then we provide resources to each other when, and that's what one of the strengths of being aligned around these priorities that are not just priorities for the Presidential Innovation Fellows. These are priorities that are really across all of government. These are this is aligned with what they call the second term management agenda. What are the things that The executive office is going to say, this is how we're going to make our government work better. And we're all going to get aligned to make the government work better in this way. And it's neat to be a part of that.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. We're getting to the end here, and I want to close with a couple, sort of bringing it back to the concrete. You know, I think it's not even obvious that you're going to get paid as a fellow, and I just want to clarify to anyone who's wondering that yes, you do get paid. Yes, it's a real salary. It was a very good salary. It depends on sort of where you're coming in from the pay scale, of course. I think there's some people who have questions about whether or not they can be work remote. Do they have to relocate? I would say that for a lot, most people were in DC most of the time, but there are certainly exceptions. Are there other things, putting yourself in the mind of an applicant right now, are there other things that you think you would have liked to know beforehand or questions that you think people would have?
Well, I think that, I think you bring up like some good points. Like I think in the first round, they hadn't figured out how to make sure everybody had health insurance and so forth because some of it's short term, and they've sorted all of that out. So, you know, you'll have a job, you'll get paid, you'll get an email address, you'll get health insurance, that all of the things that you might expect to have in your first few weeks of work, you will have when you land. The other things that people asked about timelines, there's the government hiring process is incredibly slow. There's a lot of checks and balances, which are in place for good reason, but it works very differently from industry. And to some degree, appropriately so. But this is a very accelerated hiring process, and it's still something where we don't expect that you will know. I don't know what the exact dates are, but it'll be a while. Applications close April 7th, and then it'll take many weeks before the candidates are figured out, and there should be some communication around this. And then the start will be in early summer, so, probably mid to late June. So I think that is something that is not common with industry. Like normally there's a position open, you get hired in a few days, few weeks, and boom, you're on the job. And government hiring is very different.
Yeah, and I would just to jump on that a little bit, I think that's sort of in general, like, a good sort of entry into the experience you should be expecting. I mean, this is a very prestigious opportunity. It's humbling and it's fantastic, but we're still kind of a startup of our own. You know, we talk about it in round one, round two, round three. I mean, sometime 47 years from now, hopefully we won't be referring to it as round 47, but next year's class. And so there's a lot of stuff that's like still getting worked out, a lot of kinks to be ironed out. And I mean, most of the folks coming in have, these are the kinds of worlds that we come from, so we know this. But, you know, it's not perfect, and there'll be little bumps. And I think this is something that if you're looking for something super polished, if you don't have a lot of tolerance for sort of this as you go, this isn't going to be the best space for you, because part of the environment is to make use of all of our energy and collaboration to like help figure some of this stuff out. That's actually something I've really enjoyed, is getting to contribute to helping the program sustain for the next forthcoming classes. Take it all with a grain of salt and be excited the fact that it's genuinely an adventure and a super fun one, but definitely one that has all sorts of surprises.
Yeah, I mean, this is not for the faint of heart, right? This is not for... this is not at all a typical government job, and the program is not looking for folks who really value stability. You know, they're looking for people who care about making an impact, who are prepared to work hard, change course quickly when sort of the environment calls for it, and who recognize that there's a lot of ambiguity and uncertainty in the work that they're going to be doing. Maybe some of their work might not even see the light of day, but like a startup, while the chances of success may be low, the potential impact, if you are successful, is enormous, right? And I think that makes up for the fact that, you know, something that you work on might not, you know, might get stalled out for a long period of time because of a variety of laws or policies or just certain people, right? And that's something that fellows have to be aware of, have to be able to work around. But I think it can be really exciting for the right person.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really good point, that there's ambiguity and there's lack of a predefined shape by design. And the program needs people who can come here and make shape that needs to happen by listening to the people who are learning from them and also bringing in that user-centric design perspective and able to, you know, realize, hey, this was a direction that was set and we got to switch it now. Or, hey, there's an opportunity to do a project that's going to make a huge difference here. So let's make it happen. And I think that that it is a huge opportunity. And nowhere else, certainly not in the software industry, have I experienced this ability where you could do something and you could imagine that this actually might affect a trajectory that lasts hundreds of years. Like, that just doesn't happen in the software industry, in my experience, but it can happen in government work because you're not just making software, you're affecting cultural change and processes, and you're changing the way the government does things.
Fantastic. Well, thanks everyone for dialing in on this special podcast, a special edition of Tectonic PIF podcast. And, you know, definitely reach out to us if you have questions. You know, it closes pretty soon. You can tweet at us. I'm at Jason Shen. One word. Do you guys have a preferred meet? Sorry, go ahead.
I'm at Ultrasaurus, like the dinosaur. And Molly, you are?
At Molly Rue. Actually, Molly Ruskin. Sorry, that's my email. You can email me too, I guess. Molly with an IE.
All right, we'll put it in the show notes. Thank you.
And fantastic. Have a good night, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Night.
Bye-bye.